Welcome to the Beeson Podcast, coming to you from Beeson Divinity School on the campus of Samford University. Now your host, Doug Sweeney.
Welcome to the Beeson Podcast. I'm your host, Doug Sweeney, and I am pleased to say that I'm joined today by my friend, Dr. Ed Stetzer, who is an alumnus of Beeson Divinity School. We'll ask him about that in just a few minutes. We'll be preaching here in chapel at Beeson Divinity School this coming Tuesday. We'll ask him about that as well. But serves primarily as dean of our sister school in Southern California, Talbot School of Theology, part of Biola University. Ed is also scholar in residence and teaching pastor at the Mariners Church in Southern California. Brother, we're glad to have you on the podcast and welcome you back to one of your alma maters.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here. Whenever I talk to Sweeney, I get nervous though because I'm behind on a book project, and your dad is my agent. So I've got to jump to get these things done. I should be working on it right now, but I'm thrilled to be here with you. Love that you're now the dean of the Beeson Divinity School. What a great impact you've had, and I got to tell you, my own life was deeply impacted by my time at Beeson Divinity School.
Well, we're thrilled to have you. I'm sure my father, when he listens to this, will be thrilled that you're thinking about your book projects. I'm sure you're going to finish this podcast and go finish a book for him in just a day or two. So I want to introduce, Ed, you to our listeners. Lots of people at Beeson know you. Lots of evangelicals who listen to podcasts know about you. But just for those who don't know as much about you as they'd like to know, let me begin by asking you to tell us just a couple of things about your life and ministry. Most importantly, how'd you come to faith in Christ and sense that the Lord was leading you into ministry?
Yeah, so I grew up, my family's from New York City and took me home when I was a littlest kid to right on the place called Flora Park on the edge of New York City, and then Queens area, and then out in Long Island. And then, so I grew up in an Irish Catholic household that was far more Irish than they were Catholic. So no real faith commitment that was there. A series of things, actually, my sister first and then my mother, they had came to Christ in primarily the charismatic movement of the Episcopal Church. Mm-hmm. And well, my mother did. My sister rode a bus in a church into New York City. So it's a pretty fascinating story to see how people reach out. Anyway, so when I was youth group age, I got in trouble, actually. I got grounded, and my mother said, you can either go to this retreat, and she must have signed me up ahead of time, she must have known, or you can be grounded for a week. And I said, well, I'll go to the stupid retreat. And there I heard the good news of the gospel. So I came to Christ in the charismatic movement of the Episcopal Church, and was discipled in the after, you know, I go Tuesdays to something at the local Assemblies of God Church called Calvary Assembly, which I found out was a very significant Assemblies of God Church later. This was in Orlando. We had moved from New York to Orlando when New York City kind of went belly up financially, trying to find work, starting over. And it was a tough time in our lives. You know, the journey we were on at times, we were on public assistance. My parents divorced, my sister got cancer, and you know, it was a lot. But the Lord in his goodness, through that turbulence and tumult, redeemed me. And I became a follower of Jesus. From there, I mentioned one of the greatest parts of my life is I met my high school sweetheart. We were 15 years old. I started a Bible study in our high school, co-started, and she came to that Bible study, and we met each other there. We were friends for a year, started dating at 16, married at 20, moved to Buffalo, New York at 21 to plant a church among the urban poor. I'm going to get to the Beeson part because that's a fun part. So I was... when we went up to Buffalo, I was 21 years old. I mean, nobody should have, you know, by then I was in a low church denominational tradition that didn't have a lot of ordination standards. So a local church ordained me and went to Buffalo, started knocking on doors, planting a church, did a master's degree when I was there, then did a second master's degree. One of the person I really admired, still do, his name is Elmer Towns. He invited me to study with him in the areas of church growth and church planning. So I did a second master's degree there. And then I was a part of the, I think it was the second class of the Beeson Divinity School. And I got a phone call, and I don't know if it was from Timothy George or not, but in my romantic recollection of it, Timothy George called me personally, but I actually don't think it was. I think it was somebody else. And they recruited me, and I said, well, it's not accredited. And they said, the person who told me, so it wouldn't have been Timothy George, the person who told me said, well, you know, we know it's going to be accredited. And once it's accredited, your degree will be accredited, which I will tell you right now is not true. So I was recruited to the Beeson Divinity School under false pretenses.
Oh, my goodness.
But I had some of the best years. I would go on to do a PhD, and that's great. But I would say and this is not just because I'm being nice because you're the dean. My time at Beeson Divinity School was transformative, far more impactful than any of the two master's degrees I did or the PhD I did, in some ways because it was a healthy place. Where the places I studied were not always so healthy. It was a healthy place. Timothy George we'd have lunch with leading scholars were in, and I took preaching with Olfords and it was really a theology with Timothy George. How do you not like theology with Timothy George? And, and I was already, reformed, it just helped me grow in my maturity and my theology and more. So anyway, do we say competitive? No, we're not competitive. We're all in this together, but we're a sister school. So I should say come to the Talbot School of Theology, but I got to tell you, I have such great memories of Beeson Divinity School, and I'm thankful you're there.
Wonderful. So how did they get you here? You moved here from where?
Well, I was in Pennsylvania, and I just left the church we planted in New York, and I was going down the road to plant a church in Erie, Pennsylvania, and Wallace, what would his name be? He was the state exec of Pennsylvania. Now I feel terrible. I think he's with the Lord now. So he's probably the one who called me. And they said, partly because I just finished my second master's degree. And again, I'm talking about how the sausage is made here. And they called me and said, would you come be part of this program, DMIN? And I said, well, I don't have enough time from when you finish your master's degree to you start your DMIN. I think it had to be 2 years maybe of ministry experience. And they waived that for me. And partly because, I moved up to Buffalo at 21. So then they graciously recruited me, Jerry Batson and some others who were a part of that.
You'd heard about Timothy or Beeson? How'd we get on your radar screen way back then?
I think it was that former state exec whose name is escaping me. I'm looking to see if I can find it right now.
Wallace Williams.
Wallace Williams. Thank you. Not David Wallace. Wallace Williams. Was he the state exec? Well, I guess we can edit all that out later. But Wallace Williams was the one who called me and he invited. So I didn't know a lot, and then later found out just how, significant. It's hard for people. If you're not in this world, it's hard for people to understand just how big a deal it was when the Beeson Divinity School was started at a Baptist university, a multi-denominational school that was evangelical, but broadly evangelical. I still remember teasing Timothy George. I don't know if I've ever made the joke to you, because you got an Anglican chair, you got a Baptist chair. I asked him once, what's it going to take for me to work there? He says, you're a Baptist, so I got too many Baptists. And so you got to become, I said, I started an Anglican. I said to him once, I said, where's your Pentecostal chair? The largest group in the world, you don't have a Pentecostal chair. But I love the theological depth, breadth of evangelical orthodoxy, and without kind of the jerks. I mean, there were if you come to Talbot School of Theology, the video, I get a little briefing of the videos, and number 6 on my list is, please don't be a jerk. Don't come here if you're going to, this is going to be it. And I just felt that winsome spirit that was there from the beginning when you had Anglicans and Presbyterians, Frank Thielman and others, and you could see that. And so I think it was Wallace Williams who recruited me. I had already read Timothy George, and Timothy George influenced, because I was reformed but not mad about it, and so he could sort of help, and he kind of was in many ways a theological mentor to me. I don't know that he would probably see it that way, because I read a lot of books and asked him questions rather than him meeting with me on a monthly basis or something like that. So you had some big shoes to step into. I should interview you about stepping into Timothy George's shoes and not even being a Baptist. Like Timothy, good Baptist, though, on the Reform side, and certainly more ecumenical than a whole lot of people be comfortable with in his denomination. But here you are. Like, I think you and I are the only people who listen to the podcast who knows what your denomination is, like this secret Lutheran denomination that is, I've done their national meeting. They're wonderful people, but they're just not as known. You got the LCMS and the ELCA.
Well, we're brand new.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And doing great work. I just was emailing some of your leadership the other day about how they're trying to turn up more of the missional focus, and I really liked it.
Yeah. All right. So, Ed, give us a word. I didn't plan to ask you this before, but now that our listeners have heard the early story of your life, your conversion, your early ministry, give us a word about why seminary. You know, guys like you and me are talking to people all the time about these things. And there are lots of folks whose stories are a lot like yours, who feel like, you know what, I don't even need to go to seminary. And if you're like me, you're trying to persuade folks like that, that there really is a significant value to the kind of formation that seminary can provide for you for a long life of ministry. But how'd you get talked into it? I bet you were a naturally gifted guy. You could have been a well-known ministry leader without seminary. What's the value of having been to seminary?
Well, you know, so I started in, I was in, not really full-time because I was working bivocationally, but I was a lead pastor planting a church before I did any theological education. And I was, I went to an undergraduate college that was, you know, sort of one of the colleges that was moved away from their Christian commitment. And I took two religion courses because it was required. But so at, you know, 21, we packed our bags and moved to the inner city of Buffalo, New York to plant a church in the fastest shrinking city in America in the midst of the crack epidemic of the late 80s and early 90s. And so I got there and I didn't immediately start going to seminary. I had been discipled pretty robustly in that Anglican Episcopal charismatic tradition I was in, and then the Assemblies of God, you know, weeknights. I mean, I went to church a lot of times. I had a lot of discipleship. But, and I got there, and I got a job, and more than one, but one of the jobs I got was I was blowing insulation and doing renovation of houses. And so a contractor of sorts. I ran a crew. And so I would work, and you know, the crew would be send them off 5:30 in the morning. I'd work several hours. I had arrangement with the company that I could get the crews going, and then I'd do some other things. But pretty quickly I realized that, man, I had some level of understanding that probably a good church member would have. You know, I could teach Bible studies. I could preach sermons to some level. But pretty quickly, maybe about 6 months in, I realized I really don't know what I need to know to do this. So I was, in fact, I've never done a degree where I was full-time doing my degree. And I recently wrote an article about if you can do that, what a great opportunity. We have hundreds of students here, you know, doing our grad program who have the ability to do that, but a whole lot don't. I didn't. And so I realized that I needed some help. And so I talked to, I'm trying to remember who it was. Someone by the name of Dorn McCarty, who most people wouldn't know now, but he was a key leader in theological education. And I said, I need to learn some things. I need to learn more of the Bible. I need to learn more. I mean, I need to have more than just the knowledge that I had. So at the time, the first seminary I got my MDiv, they had extension centers. They later pulled back on those things, but they had extension centers. One was in Pittsburgh. And if you know the geography of that region, Buffalo is 4 hours up the road. So, but I was committed enough that I drove every weekend that class was in session 4 hours each way, brought [S2] Wow. [S1] A sleeping bag and slept on the floor of an office building so that I could spend all day Friday and Friday night and all day Saturday learning and getting my MDiv. And this was before stuff was online. I studied with Elmer Towns and did some distance education, but it was on VHS tapes, so a whole different world. Mm-hmm. But so for about 5 years, it took me 5 years. I squeezed my 3-year MDiv into about 5 years. I would drive there, and to honest, Doug, it was life to me. It was like when I learned the Old Testament, I would then teach and preach the Old Testament. When I learned preaching, right? So I took preaching classes. Actually, it was the preaching class at Good Beeson what was so impactful to me because I couldn't get the alignment for the preaching class at the seminary where I was, so I took it at the local Catholic seminary. I actually did five schools. So I took preaching and Reformation theology from Christ the King Catholic Seminary in East Aurora, New York. Hmm. And the preaching was zero help. The preaching class was zero help. It was, and that's not there. They actually say they were a little surprised a Protestant was in there because But I learned good stuff about public speaking, and then I took the course on Reformation history, and it turns out, Doug, they have a whole different perception of what went down during that Reformation. You probably figured that out.
Who knew?
So, but for me, like every time I went, it was so valuable to me. And again, I know I sound like an old man. I would drive 4 hours each way uphill in the snow and sleep on a sleeping bag because every time I came in, I learned more. So I get that for a lot of people, they reject the idea. And you're still predominantly residential, but this new PhD program you have and others, you've got some great alternatives as well. But you know, most of our students, a good percentage, but not most, most of our students are not residential. So I think that the idea that I don't want to go away for 3 years, I want to do ministry and impact the world, I think that's a dated idea and perception. But I would say that if you can enter into something of almost of a neo-monastic community where you're sitting in a classroom and doing what the writer of Hebrews says, provoking one another to love and good deeds, I would do that. And I, in some ways, I regret that I never did that. Keep in mind that I did my first two masters while planting in Buffalo. I did my DMin while planting in Erie, Pennsylvania. And then I did my PhD while a professor at Southern. So for me, and so here's, and I'm giving a long answer, so I apologize. You can interrupt at any point or you can edit me out at any point. But part of the reality is you and I have been around long enough to know that what happened was, is that in the 50s and 60s, I don't have a living memory of that, but everyone sort of went to seminary if they were going to prepare for ministry in certain denominational traditions. There were still anti-educational traditions. But then the 80s came and the 90s came and the rise of the temporary church and the practical church and the seeker church. And people kind of said, you know, they de-emphasized those things. And I get it. Like I watched it happen while I was doing these, you know, two masters and two doctorates. So I didn't buy into that approach, but I watched it happen. And everyone said, you know, we sort of like, we know what we need to know. What we need to do is help people live and practical messages. And the worst expressions were, you know, sermons just became, you know, five ways to have a better life. And but there were still, you know, a lot of people came, Jesus, I'm for that. But sure. I think what's happened, and kind of back to your question, what's happened in the last 5 years is people have realized that the complexity of ministry. I put up a little meme, a reel, and it was, you might have seen it, not mine, but a lot of people put it out. It had the Olympics compared to 1976 and today, and had this male, I don't know what they call the horse thing. And so he comes up and he does one twist and he lands on the horse and everyone applauds. And then it said what 2024 Olympics were, which were, you know, 14 twists and a land and a hop and a jump and a land. And I tweeted pastors in the 80s versus pastors today. Mm. And I think that, and I in there said, this is one of the reasons people are rediscovering and reengaging theological education. So if you're not ready to talk about theology of the body, if you're not ready to talk about you know, being made in the image of God, worthy of dignity and respect, if you're not willing to defend the nature of the inspiration and inerrancy of Scripture because you've studied it, if you're not willing to teach theological principles that you know, in a world that is, you know, where so many Christians are just semi-Pelagian because they chose God, and what does that mean, and how do we explain that? If you're not willing to go in to learn those things, now you can learn them on your own. I'm not unaware that you can learn them on your own, but having people like I had at Beeson, or we have here at Talbot, who have walked this path before you and say, these are the best places to read, let's talk about this together, let's engage this together. If you can do it, it's a remarkable gift. And so that's why, because you remember, I mean, when I first met you, Doug, I wasn't a theological educator. I've been a theological educator for 5 years. When I came to the Wheaton College, I was leading the Wheaton College Billy Graham Center. And I was a professor. I taught a class a year. So I was a professor too. But when I was there, I transitioned to be the dean there, a dean there. And now that's where I want to spend the next 10 years of my life is helping to educate women and men who are ministering in much more complex ways. And I think theological education is a gift that can help them on that journey.
That's great.
That's a long answer. My apologies.
And I say that as somebody who attended in person the 1976 Summer Olympics in Montreal.
Did you really?
I did indeed.
Okay, you're a little older than I expected. I would be 10 in 1976. So that's pretty cool.
I was 11.
Okay, we're about the same age.
I was there. My father was part of a group that was there with Moody Bible Institute doing evangelism in Montreal amidst the Olympics.
That
meant for me that as an 11-year-old kid, I got to go to all kinds of Olympic events in Montreal. Wow. We had a grand time.
Wow.
All amazing. Right. So we're friends. You're a fascinating guy. You've had a fascinating life. we only have a few minutes left. Take just two of them and kind of fast forward to the present. What did you do when you finished your Doctor of Ministry degree at Beeson? And how does that get us up to Talbot in the present?
Okay, so a little weird. So I was just planted a church in Erie, Pennsylvania, Mill Creek Community Church. It had grown pretty substantially. So, people, I guess, were at some point asking advice, or I was speaking at a few conferences then. And then I get a phone call on my cell phone from someone who wasn't super famous at the time, but certainly plenty famous, someone by the name of Rick Warren. And he called and said, "Ed, we are launching a seminary program in partnership with the North American Mission Board and the individual seminaries of the Southern Baptist Convention. And he asked me if I would be willing to be jointly hired by Rick Warren, Al Mohler at Southern Seminary, and then the North American Mission Board, Bob Record," which there's certain historic irony that those were the
three
people.
Yeah.
And so I said yes to that. I said, the ink was, I literally said to him, I only have a D.Min. I don't have a Ph.D. And they said they don't have anybody who, I guess they couldn't find someone with a Ph.D. who had planted North American churches. It's much more common now. So Ph.D.s are much more common now, too. But so I thought about it, prayed about it, and I packed up the bags and moved there. And I was a professor there for 3 years. I was the Nehemiah Project Church Planting Professor. Later on, the history kind of got rewritten a little bit, and Saddleback's partnership got a bit written out of that in the subsequent history. You can Google and find the original history, but because Rick Warren was the one who first called me. And so I went there and I taught church planting. I did a PhD while I was there. And finished the PhD, wrote my PhD dissertation on church planting, actually. And then from there, in quick fashion, I left Southern after about 3 years. I became in charge of the national program. I was the head of the Southern program. And then I became the national director of the Nehemiah Project, had a church planting professor at every seminary. We developed partnerships with about 20 seminaries, helping them train church planters and raise up church planters. And that was at the North American Mission Board. And then Tom Rainer called me and asked me to lead something called Lifeway Research. And then I became a vice president of Lifeway. And over time, my role in life sort of just changed. And I got invited into non-denominational or interdenominational space, which I felt very comfortable in. When I was working at Lifeway, I was increasingly doing those things. I think I was at Lifeway when I went to your denomination as well. And so I was helping Lifeway bridge to more broadly, it's a sales resources. That was a win for them. But then I went to Wheaton College, led the Billy Graham Center for 7 years. I was about a decade at Lifeway, 7 years at Wheaton. And that was probably a big shift in my life where I was a facilitator, a convener, a researcher, until now I became the dean at the Talbot School of Theology about a year ago. And I'm a professor of mission and Christian leadership, and I teach here, and I teach twice a year in England. And that's where people take, if you take a class with me, you come to England with me and take a class, because we enjoy, taking our students overseas as well. And that's kind of that's the trajectory. And now I'm mainly a motivational speaker who lives in a van down by the river.
Most of the time, that last sort of fast forwarding from Beeson Divinity School to Talbot, you were also pastoring, right? Or at least
I guess most of the
preaching in churches.
Yeah, I always pastor. I've never been at a place where I haven't been a pastor of some sort. So when I went to Chicago, when I was at Lifeway, I planted a church. I was interim a few churches, and I planted a church that I left 8 years ago. So that's the last church I planted. When I came to when I went to Chicago, I became the interim pastor of the Moody Church for 4 years. Wonderful gospel preaching church. And then I was teaching pastor at High Point, and now I'm the teaching pastor at Mariners Church. I think I love the church. I think that God has chosen the church. I don't think. The Bible says God has chosen the church to make known his manifold wisdom. I think one of the ways that, Talbot's experienced some really great growth this year. We're very excited about our new numbers of our incoming class. And I think part of that is we just announce loudly and broadly that we're here to serve the church. And I think that makes a huge difference. Now, we'll have lots of people go into the academy, but we're ultimately here to serve the church.
Yeah, that's marvelous. All right. So you're relatively new still to Talbot,
yeah,
Biola?
Yeah, like a little over a year.
What's the Lord doing there? What excites you about Talbot, Biola? What's going on in Los Angeles that our viewers need to know about and ought to be praying about?
Well, you know, I mean, good things are going on at Talbot. I feel a little strange talking about the good things at Talbot on the VSIN podcast.
No, not at all.
You know that our provost, you know, we got kids like at VSIN, not at VSIN, at Samford. Matter of fact, my daughter, you know, your former dean of music and arts was my college suite mate. So anyway, so it's great. We're just looking at our new numbers year over year. Our incoming Bible and theology majors, we're a little different. Like at Samford, you're not vertically integrated in the same way we are. The Talbot School of Theology is both grad, about 1,450 students at the grad level, and then undergrad is, and everyone takes a Bible minor at Biola. So there's some differences for sure. But our undergrad major is up 30% incoming year over year. We're thrilled with that. Our seminary incoming class is up 11% as of today. Year over year, so we're thrilled with that. Our online program's up 70% year over year, so we're thrilled with that. That was small to start; it's relatively new. So, you know, of course, Beeson has these incredible blessings of these endowments and more. But you've still got to have students every year. Mm-hmm. We don't have those things, so for us, and for you, but for all schools right now, to see growth is really exciting for us. You know, we're the fifth largest multi-denominational seminary in the world. I'll wait till the new numbers come out because that'll shift just a little bit in the more positive direction for us, but I'll wait for those new numbers to come out. But I don't think people realize, my guess is, Doug, that more people know about Beeson Divinity School than know about the Talbot School of Theology. Just because we haven't told our story as well. We're out here in the West Coast, even though it's the best coast. So part of what I love to do is I just love to tell people about our faculty. You know, we have 60 plus faculty, 300 plus books published in the last few years, and people use our books all over. We have world-class apologetics, our spiritual formation. I mean, I could go on and on and on. We have the largest apologetics program in the world. I think we have the largest philosophy program in the world. Our spiritual formation program is, I think it's a global standard for producing pastors who actually know who they are in Christ and more. So the more I've been here, the more thrilled that I've been. And I was really encouraged to see the growth year over year that we hope to see. And we're about to make some announcements of a few new programs we're starting, some other languages, things of that sort. So the Lord's been good to us. All I had to do, and this is the great thing, and you have, I mean, because I know you're a faculty, is because Talbot is like I want to do an ad campaign, and they won't let me use this title because it sounds negative, but I wanted to call it the Talbot You Do Not Know. So all I got to do is tell people about Talbot, and they're like, really? And they're more interested to come. So that's the real blessing that you have. When you have good, solid people like you do at Beeson, like we do at Talbot, just getting the word out about them and the programs that you have make a difference.
That's marvelous. Thanks be to God.
Amen.
So what about the Mariners Church? Not many of our listeners will know much about it. Tell us a little bit about it and your ministry there.
Yeah, so I'm teaching pastor and scholar in residence. So that means, you know, I teach and preach, teach or preach 8 to 10 times a year. I guess it's a little more than that. I just gave a message a few weeks ago. I train the staff on theological issues. We want to be a more theologically driven ministry. So I do that. Like I said, I preach on weekends. And I during the spring and the fall, I'll do a 5-week Wednesday night series where people want to go deeper. So, we did this fall, I'm doing Christians at Our Best, which is the companion study to my book, Christians in the Age of Outrage. And basically, because it's an election year and everyone's mad. And so how do we be at our best in these kind of years? So Eric Geiger's the pastor, and people, my guess is if you've got a pastor audience, they read Simple Church, and that's Eric's doctoral dissertation, and he and Tom Rainer popularized it and made it a book that became the best-selling Christian leadership book. Eric's the best leader I've ever worked with, and we've been close friends. I worked for him. When I was at Lifeway, I would fly down every month to preach at Christ Fellowship in Miami, where he was the executive pastor. So we worked together there. I helped recruit him to Lifeway, where we served together for 7 years. He served a little longer after I left, and now we're at Mariners Church. So it's good to, you know, ministry is a team sport best done with friends.
Yeah, wonderful. And then real briefly, what about these books you're supposed to be writing What's going on now at the desk of Ed Stetzer? What's the book project you've got going on now?
The book project that your father is waiting patiently for.
Yeah.
And I'm probably 75% done with. It's basically the present situation and future prospects of evangelicalism. I think that I think you can't be paying attention and not see that evangelicalism's in some challenging waters. We feel that you recently joined the board of the National Association of Evangelicals with us. We're glad that you're here. It's a complicated time. We're in a real historic realignment in regard to religious faith and practice in America today. I've written a lot about it. More will come out in the book. I talk about the great sort, where people are now sorting themselves into their churches more ideologically than theologically or yeah. denominationally. I think that's a key issue. I think there's more to it as well. I think, you know, on all sides, there are evangelicals who are walking away from basic biblical truths. There are evangelical institutions that are saying on some very important issues, well, we're just going to agree to disagree on that. And simultaneously, there are people on who are saying that everybody has compromised the gospel when really there's a lot of wonderful ministries now being maligned as well. So it's a tricky thing because there's more than one thing going on at once. So I try to frame some of that. Your dad's been affirming of a lot of it. He's got a good eye for those things. So it'll be out, if all goes well, it'll be out next year from IVP. And then I got another book beyond that your father worked with me on as well. So but that one, we're doing one at a time. We're just taking one at a time. But to be clear, I am 6 years late. So let's recognize my failure because I keep doing new things. Like I came to Wheaton and I wasn't a dean. They wanted me to be a dean. I became a dean. Our program was going great. And I came here. I just got to stop taking new jobs is basically what I got to do.
Well, Ed, you're a busy man with a very fruitful ministry. We're going to cut you some slack.
No, I appreciate you cutting me some slack. But again, I'm very thankful for you and the calm, cool waters that you model for us to navigate. I appreciate you.
All right. Last question. We're really looking forward to having you here Tuesday. By the time our listeners listen to this podcast episode, you will have preached in Beeson Divinity School Chapel. And in the program notes, we'll put a link to the recording of the sermon. But what are you going to tell the students about on Tuesday when you preach?
Well, first of all, let me just say I'm really just thrilled and honored that you'd have me come in and let me come and preach. And so I'm looking forward to being there. I think what I'm going to talk through is some of what it means to represent Jesus and his kingdom in these tumultuous and turbulent times. I think that one of the things I'm going to emphasize is that when I was preparing for ministry, you'd step into a ministry world and there were people who disagreed with you. And they weren't without challenges, and you might have internal conflict in your church. But now you're just going into a different situation. And if you chose ministry because you wanted to go into ministry because people would like you and constantly affirm you, you've probably chosen badly. But I think ultimately, when you across 2,000 years of the history of the Christian church, this is probably far better of a season than our sisters and brothers for 2,000 years have faced at other times and places. But it's also not the romanticized version of ministry that maybe they're hearing from people who are my age or a little older. Not that it was all easy, but we're just stepping into a different time and a place, and we want to be prepared for that cultural moment.
Can't wait to have you here. Listeners, this has been Dr. Ed Stetzer. He is the Dean of Talbot School of Theology, which is part of Biola University outside of Los Angeles. Ed also serves as scholar in residence and teaching pastor at Mariners Church. We're proud to say he's an alumnus of Beeson Divinity School, and he'll be back in Birmingham soon. Thanks, Ed, for joining us. Thanks, listeners, for tuning in. We love you. We're praying for you, and we say goodbye for now.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Beeson Podcast, coming to you from the campus of Samford University. Our theme music is by Advent Birmingham. Our announcer is Mike Pascarello. Our engineer is Rob Willis, and our show host is Doug Sweeney. For more episodes and to subscribe, visit beesondivinity.com/podcast. You can also find the Beeson Podcast on iTunes and Spotify.